I'm Jodie Moon
from Pages of the Moon,
and because it's a multiple of five on the podcast this week, Jo and I have read the same book, which was 100 Days of Sunlight by Abby Emmons, which is an indie book.
It is. She's an independent author. She published this herself on all the sites I think it's available on, but she did it through Ingram Sparks, from what I understand from reading about her, and Amazon, mainly.
Gorgeous cover art.
Yes.
Definitely worth, you guys, I know you can't see it because you're listening to us, but you should definitely at least go to Amazon to check out the cover art, because it is very pretty.
It's also got some, once you've read the book, you understand the cover a lot more, which I thought was quite a nice touch, but we'll discuss that further. But when you look at it, if you're thinking, why are all these random things on there? It does get explained in the book, which I thought was quite nice.
So the way it's going to work is I'm going to read the blurb, then Jo and I are going to take it in turns to pitch the book. Obviously, as we've both read the same one this time, it'll be interesting to see whether we highlight different elements or the same in our pitch. And then we'll just talk about it and our feelings and our thoughts. So here's the blurb for 100 Days of Sunlight. When 16-year-old poetry blogger Tessa Dickinson is involved in a car accident and loses her eyesight for 100 days, she feels like her whole world has been turned upside down. Terrified that her vision might never return, Tessa feels like she has nothing left to be happy about. But when her grandparents place an ad in the local newspaper looking for a typist to help Tessa continue writing and blogging, an unlikely answer knocks at their door. Weston Ludovico, a boy her age with bright eyes, an optimistic smile, and no legs. Knowing how angry and afraid Tessa is feeling, Weston thinks he can help her. But he has one condition. No one can tell Tessa about his disability. Tessa spurns Weston's obnoxious optimism, convinced that he has no idea what she's going through. But Weston knows exactly how she feels and reaches into her darkness to show her that there is more than one way to experience the world. As Tessa grows closer to Weston, she finds it harder and harder to imagine life without him. And Weston can't imagine life without her. But he still hasn't told her the truth. And when Tessa's sight returns, he'll have to make the hardest decision of his life. Vanish from Tessa's world, or overcome his fear of being seen.
Dun dun dun!
Dun dun dun! I will pitch it now.
Pitch it, girl.
Tessa lost her sight in a car accident, and despite her grandparents' best efforts to cheer her up, she can't find anything to smile about in her new reality. She's perfectly ready to wait out the 100 days until her eyesight recovers, completely absorbed in darkness. Until Weston comes along, determined to show her that there's more to the world than what you can see. Reluctant at first, Tessa finds herself slowly accepting his help, little knowing how uniquely positioned he is to understand what she's going through.
Ooh. So yours is dead good. So I've actually just, I don't even know, I'm just going on a whim here. But my pitch is, Weston takes a chance to help Tessa, a 16-year-old recently blinded girl who loves poetry. But he makes them promise one thing, no one can tell her he has no legs.
Okay.
Yeah.
There we
That's
go.
That's my pitch.
It was a lot shorter than the blurb, which
I think really helps.
Goes on forever. So we had this conversation back before we even started this podcast about how YA books have the longest blurbs. And then by and large, we've not had a problem, but this one, like, the blurb is an essay.
My other problem, actually, with the blurb, which I think is another reason when I was hearing you say the blurb, why I was struggling so much then with my pitch, is because the blurb gives too much away.
It says a lot.
It says a lot, and I also feel like that then is left very little to read about. Like, once you've read the blurb, it's almost like you've read the book.
Yeah, sure.
And like when we pitch, I know we're normally pitching to each other to entice the other, but this time if you, as in the listeners, haven't heard of this book, we're sort of pitching then to you. And even though I know we've just read the blurb, the pitch is to entice you to read it. Now, I have some mixed feelings, which we'll go into later, but I do feel like it's really hard to pitch a book with a blurb that is so wordy and literally tells the entire story, because the good thing about when we've pitched other books is more that we leave on that sense of the thing that the blurb doesn't say, and we're like, oh, but this is gonna happen, and you're like, oh! And you can't really do that because we've just dropped the entire plot into everyone's laps.
Sure.
Basically. But yeah, so how did you find the book? How did you find reading it?
Okay, initially I will say I think it's an interesting premise.
Yep.
I think there are some interesting ideas there.
Yeah.
I struggled with the execution of it, not gonna lie.
Yep.
Right from the start. So, okay, To be clear, I think characters can be annoying without them being badly written. And I think Tessa is meant to be annoying to start off with.
Mm-hmm.
The way she's like lashing out at people is, it's a lot. And, you know, her grandparents are just trying to help her. One of them was in the car with her when they had the accident. Is fine, is uninjured. No, no, she's sort of acting like she blames them for something here.
Yeah.
In a way that was very unappealing. You know, she's in a horrible situation. Yeah, I don't want to minimize how awful it would be to suddenly, without warning, in a traumatic accident, lose your sight. But can we also take a moment to remember that this is a temporary situation? You know, she's going to be blind for less than a third of a year, which she seems to sort of... At first I thought, does she not believe the doctors? But then there are a few things that come up in her narration where it seems that she does believe the doctors, that she's probably going to see again in, well, less than 100 days. By the time we start, she's almost a month into it already, so it's another 70 days. Yeah, okay, that feels like a long time when you're a teenager, sure. But it's like 2.5 more months. And she's acting as if it's the end of the world.
I think the thing I kept noting as well is, in the book you get two points of view. So you get both Tessa's and Weston's point of view. And you see both very different styles of characterisation. But also, in Tessa's, it sounds like Tessa has always been homeschooled.
Mm.
So I don't feel like she's missed out on a lot. She also mentions that she didn't go out a lot before the accident. Her life is online,
yeah,
which I feel like she could be very disconnected from. But the thing that I struggled with the most was, yes, we needed a plot point to get Weston to be around Tessa, which isn't really a spoiler because you find it out, well, it was in the blurb.
Yeah.
But basically, Tessa's grandparents put an ad in the newspaper, which also, can I just say, I know this book is in America, but who uses the newspaper for these sort of things? But anyway, puts an advert that they quickly pull, but Weston's dad is the owner of the newspaper and he sees this advertisement and he feels he can go and help write up Tessa's poetry so she doesn't feel as disconnected from the life that she knew before she was temporarily blinded.
Mm.
Now, I know we needed that plot device to happen for these two characters to meet, but in this day and age, there are a lot of things around. So also what I struggled with was the keyboard situation. If you're a writer, you might find that you look at the keyboard quite a bit, but most writers, after writing stuff for so long, end up picking up where the keys are.
Mm-hmm.
There's also little tabs on the keys so you know where to touch type.
Mm-hmm.
And you could have a speech back to her. So that bothered me.
Then for a moment I was like, is this set in a time before like screen readers and that sort of thing was readily available? But she asks Siri the time. That's how she tells the time, because she can't read a watch anymore.
Exactly.
So voice recognition technology
is available.
Exists. This isn't a parallel universe where that isn't a thing.
And Instagram. She has Instagram.
If she's on the internet all the time, I find it very odd that she's not aware of this. And her grandparents are willing to pay £10 an hour for some rando to come and take her dictation. So you could literally buy some decent dictation software.
Yeah.
And jobs are good.
Yeah. Which I could understand from the grandparents' point of view. That might be a little bit over their head. But the other thing is that she's very unwilling to share any of her poetry, which is why it shocks me so much that she wouldn't try any of this.
Mm.
And the other thing, it happens later on in the book. Later on in the book, she realises, randomly, that of all this time, she could have called her friends.
Yeah.
Who are online. They've all, like, called each other previously before.
Yeah.
Now, she's very disconnected because I think she is angry at the situation. She's also very, for some reason, ashamed that she's temporarily blinded. And obviously, you know, me and Laura are both glasses wearers, so we don't understand what it's like to be blind. And also, neither of us have a disability that makes us feel helpless.
No, of course.
Like, long-standing, because I've had operations where I've been completely helpless. I haven't had knee operations, and the amount of stuff I've had to ask people to do for me was embarrassing, like helping me shower. So I do have a soft spot for understanding all of that, even if it's not knowing that for the rest of my life it's going to be the situation. But I also know that you've got to help yourself in the end. And I just didn't feel like even there was a remote flicker that she wanted to help herself. She just wanted the 100 days to pass and then see again. And it's just like, it's temporary. Like you said, it's temporary. You could, you know, I don't want to be a bitch, but I just felt like she was very negative for the sake of being negative.
Yeah.
Especially when, like you said, a month has already passed by the start of the book. You can expect those feelings, but at some point you're going to want to do something, because it begs the question, what is she doing in all of that time? She's not reading. She just asked Siri the time. Before Weston, what was she spending her time doing every day? Was she just lying there wishing she could see? Because she doesn't go outside, she doesn't write, and she's not calling anyone.
Yeah. And I was torn by this when I was reading it, because I don't want to, like you said, like, I've never been in that situation. I can't imagine how I'd feel if I suddenly went blind. I'm sure I would be devastated. And I'm sure for a period of time, I would feel like I don't even want to be, no, see, right, even as I'm saying this, I can imagine spending a few weeks feeling like this is the end of everything. But
yeah.
I am also kind of a homebody, right? I spend most of my time at my computer, and I don't know how I would feel. But I think after a month or so, especially if I know that in another 3 to 4 months I'm going to be able to see again, I'd be like, okay, this sucks. I hate being blind, but let's try and find a way to do some of the things that I used to love, which are still completely doable as a blind person. It would be one thing if her hobby was like skateboarding, which, nod to later in the book, or, you know, if her hobby was even like knitting or something, where you do have to be able to see, like if she was a visual artist, that would be very different, because you can't get a screen reader to tell you what you've sketched.
No.
That would feel like you were completely cut off from that hobby until you got your sight back. And I think that would have been a much more understandable thing for her to be so angry and resentful about.
But just touching on the anger and the resentment, it's misdirected. She's angry that her grandparents are trying to help. And that baffles me. I feel like it was meant to make us feel something for her, make us feel a little bit bad for it even more so, because, you know, she's so hurt and she's so angry. But all it did was just make me want to shake her, which I don't want to shake blind people. I don't want to do that.
Not really my favourite hobby.
But then on the flip side, we get this wonderful character who, I won't say too much about his backstory, because the way it's unveiled, I actually thought was really well handled. I liked Weston's side of the story a lot more than I liked Tessa's. But he goes on a whole journey himself pre-Tessa. And everything he does do it to annoy her.
Mm.
And she does get annoyed and she lashes out at him. And that's fine. Lash out at him. He is purposely trying to annoy
you. He actually is winding you up and stepping all over your boundaries. Fair enough to be pissed off at him.
But your grandma, who's just trying to bake a pie. No. Leave grandma alone and leave poor granddad, who's just praying for you.
Yeah, bless him.
They're trying their best. They also raised somebody. After already raising a child, they're raising another child, because Tessa's mum just wants nothing to do with her.
Sort of just got lost. Yeah, that was an interesting element of the story. I think it was interesting how it was kind of not dwelled on too much.
See, I have a problem with that.
Yeah?
Yeah, just because I just feel like she should be a lot more upset about it. I mean, there's a time and a place where you come, like you find yourself just accepting it. But as somebody who doesn't have a relationship with one of their biological parents, like sometimes it does upset me.
Right.
And when she talks, when she eventually does explain what's happened, she's just like, like I've just dropped my ice cream. She actually sounds like she'd be more upset about a bird flying into her forehead than she is about the fact that her mom is in a completely different state and didn't even come back to see her. I don't know.
Mm.
It'd be different if she was with a parent and she got a step parent and she became very connected to them. But it's her grandparents. I don't know. I was a little bit annoyed that it was sort of brushed to the side and it didn't have a greater impact.
Right, sure.
When it was set up to be this thread. If there's going to be no plot surrounding why her mum isn't in her life, then really it being her grandparents is just because it's her grandparents. There's no reason to it. There's no interchange.
True.
Yeah.
I wonder if it was important to the author for her to live with the grandparents because they wouldn't know about the technological options. But
you can just have like a really dippy mum.
Sure. Yeah. Or the other thing, because it doesn't make sense that Tessa didn't at least think about those options. So if you're just going to ignore them in the main character's point of view, then why not just have the parent ignore them as well? It could have just been the mum, realistically.
Yeah.
In the story.
Yeah.
Right, okay, just to come back to Weston for a moment, I found him a little bit annoying at points as well. I think the journey that he goes on as a character, when you see the kind of the flashbacks in his history, was really interesting. I do slightly take issue with his boundary stomping, you can just choose not to be sad attitude. So it's funny, I was kind of irritated with him and Tessa for exact opposite reasons. I don't think I was meant to be irritated with Weston. I think he was meant to be the sympathetic one to her, like having, and then hit her having to kind of come around to a more sympathetic perspective. But I sort of felt like, right, you're acting, because he was sort of acting as if like he just wanted to help. And then it's like, well, no, you know that you're annoying her and you're enjoying that. Like, that's entertaining to you. So fine, all right. I don't know. Yeah, he kind of rubbed me the wrong way. Not the whole time. I liked him more often than not, but there were definitely a few moments, and there was one quote from him that proper wound me up. This is going forwards a bit. This is at some point he's talking about after he's lost his legs, and he's talking about his girlfriend at the time, and she's come to visit him, and he's like, she was a girl, and girls are more shaken and squeamish about stuff like this. And that just goes completely unacknowledged as a point of view. Like, it's totally fine that he has this bizarre opinion apparently about the ability of women to handle terrible injuries. Like, oh no, we're just such delicate flowers. So that pissed me off, not gonna lie.
I think it annoyed me when I read it, and then I quickly remembered that he was 13. I do remember it, and I remember going, oh no, especially because it's obviously written by a female. But then I thought to myself, his mental stage at that point is also very misguided in the fact that he's like, well, I've got to break up with you now.
Yeah.
And it was just like done with. He was just very like, okay, I can't tick this box anymore, so just get rid of the questionnaire. Like, it was just very blasé about the whole thing. When I said that I enjoyed him more and I thought he was better handled, that was in comparison.
Sure, sure, sure.
Because as a whole, there are things about this book that are very difficult to digest if you are a predominant young adult reader. And I'm not slating the book. I'm not. Because there are some positives, which I think we'll get onto. But it's just to be really clear that if this is a book that you've considered, if you're somebody who reads a lot of young adult books, there's going to be a lot of things in it that you might struggle with, which is going to be sort of the execution, as Laura mentioned earlier. I don't feel like it's as polished as it could have been, mm-hmm. especially with how well thought out the plot was. Like, you can tell there was a lot of thought, there was a lot of care that went into it.
Absolutely.
But unfortunately, it just missed the mark
mm-hmm.
to the point that it kind of annoys you more. But then I also don't know if maybe it's our age. Maybe this is a very young adult book.
Yeah.
So
just... To come back to your thing about the polish, because that's a good point. And more than the kind of the character, I think part of my issue with Weston is that sometimes he seemed like he was meant to come across as really mature and then sometimes really not. And there was kind of a lack of consistency there. I'm okay with 13-year-old boys acting like 13-year-old boys, but he had this kind of like, I don't know, but I think he was a good character. And there were a few moments where I thought, what's going on with you here? But I did like him. But there were things that I just thought, from like writing technique points of view, I thought, I don't know, they bugged me a bit. So there was this thing, I think it happened more, there was a section where it was really concentrated. There was a lot of kind of repeated lines for emphasis. So there's this two or three pages where Tessa repeats the line, surely it couldn't be a gesture of kindness, about six times. It felt like, it just felt like not the most sophisticated way to explore that as a thought.
I had a few issues with some of the line, it's not the line spacing, it's like the line paragraphing sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
When she has a thought and it drops off, it's just like they drip down the page and I don't understand why they do it. It's like a sentence.
Is it meant to make it look like a poetry?
No.
Is it meant to look like poetry so that it's sort of saying that's how she thinks?
Maybe, but it's annoying. It's like there's a word on every line.
Yeah. I think it was meant to be I think it was meant to mimic poetry.
But I just feel like there's so many other ways to show that. Like, there's italics, there's... I don't know. And I don't know if that's just how, obviously, the author just really wanted to structure it, which is completely fine. But I just found it, I'm just like reading down to get the sentence to then continue going sideways. And it's just, for me, it was just a little bit annoying. And I read it as a book. I think if I read it as on Kindle, like I was going to, I think I would have found it even more frustrating.
Hmm. It's funny, I read it on Kindle and it didn't bother me too much, but I have recently read a few books written in poetry, so I think maybe I was more like, oh, okay, it's just another example of this. I do often find it odd when authors kind of switch format partway through, like midway through a book, just sort of flipping back and forth. I don't hate it. I do feel like it needs to feel like it's happening for a reason to kind of have maximum effect. Like, if that had been used to emphasize her confusion in certain moments rather than just repeating a line over and over, I think that would have been a more interesting use of that as a technique to kind of, okay, so she slips into a more poetic frame of mind when she's struggling with a question or struggling with an idea. But it felt a little bit random.
Yeah, I did feel like it was just really random. And I'm not 100% sure what the author's route into publishing this book was. I've watched a few of her YouTube videos, which is how I found this book, to recommend it to Laura's thing. And this would be really interesting to do as an indie book for the podcast. But I haven't read too much about her backstory of how she came to write the book. I don't know if she went out and she had beta readers and of what age they were, because I feel like that has a huge impact on the book. Obviously, as a 28-year-old reading this book, I'm going to be holding it to a higher standard than I would be somebody who's maybe 16, who's here for the plot, who's here for the party and nothing else, basically. And I'm here for the clean-up, the beginning. I'm here for the whole nine yards. I will say, though, credit where credit's due to the author, not just for the cover that we've obviously discussed. I thought the way in which the flashbacks were done was really well executed, and the fact that we were dripped them, especially because when we first meet Weston, and he meets, well, it's not the first, but it's one of the first times we meet him, and he meets Tessa's grandparents. He's very strict on, don't tell her I have no legs. And it does raise that question as the reader, like, how did this accident happen? And it's quite nice seeing how he got from point A to point B as he's trying to help Tessa get from point A to point B. And I thought that was really nice. And I thought it was really nice of his character to want to help somebody else. And he even makes the point of saying, I feel like I can help her when no one else can.
Sure.
And I also really liked that he wanted to annoy her because he wanted people to annoy him. He wanted people to treat him no different. And I know that she doesn't know that's why he's doing it. She just thinks he's being really, really annoying. But she does come around to it eventually, and she gets used to it. And I also think he's pushing her boundaries because no one is pushing her boundaries. The two people in her life that she's connected with are just wanting to make everything better. And he knows from personal experience that, yeah, that's nice and all, but when she gets out into the big wide world, it becomes a little bit annoying. Fortunately, he doesn't really know that Tessa's not somebody for the big wide world.
Yeah.
She kind of likes being inside of a house. But I thought that was quite nice. And I did sort of like that we started off not really liking Tessa. I mean, I think we can say that safely.
Yeah.
That neither of us really liked her. And, you know, by the end...
And I do think that was intentional on the part of the author.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And she did a good job. She created a character that was pretty obnoxious.
Really annoying. But you do find some things to start liking her about, to switch your opinion, which I thought was nicely developed over the course of the book. I thought they were dropped in at really nice points when, you know, it could become... Where it could get to a point where you find her whole arc just really annoying and there's no coming back from that. And then the author would drop in something so that you would start to think, oh, actually, no, she's not as bad as we think. And, you know, like the same as you, I think I probably gave a little bit more space for Weston to be annoying and found him probably a little bit less annoying, but only because he reminded me a lot of my brother, I think. And my brother, when he was 13, was very annoying. But I also do understand what you're saying about him being mature in aspects and then really immature in others. But I think, for me, I found that as a really interesting character choice by the author, because he wants to be this big older brother, but he also wants to be one of the lads. Well, he also wants to be this 13-year-old that has no fear. And he does all of that, but I think he runs out of scope and energy a little bit too much. Even like his whole persona is just this bouncy 16-year-old when he meets Tessa. And we kind of see that that's not changed even when he was 13 and he's been through something quite horrific. He's still just that, like, yeah, I'm still all of those things and more. And I think from knowing, obviously, because I was, there's a 7-year difference between me and my brother, when my brother was 13 and I was 20, and how annoying I found him and how annoying I found his brain when he said things. I was like, why would you even say that? I actually found that he was quite on point for his age.
Okay.
So I think I gave him a lot more scope, and I think I was a lot more harsh on Tessa because we were told right from the beginning by the author, like, look, she's going to be annoying. And the author did a fantastic job of that. And then dripped bits in to make her more likable by the end. And I just thought that was something that I quite enjoyed about the book.
Sure. Another thing that I really like, just to hone in a little bit on something, the point that you made about Weston. So when we get his whole recovery story, you find out a lot about his relationship with his brothers. And I loved that. I think I mentioned before when we talked about Nothing to See Here, whenever I read a book with sibling relationships, I'm really interested in them. And I think they were so beautifully described and shown in this book. There was one thing that I think was glossed over a little bit that I would have liked to see more about, just the way that one of the brothers... No, I'm not gonna go into details for spoiler reasons. But there was a small point where I thought, I wish we'd seen more about that. But it was such a... Sibling relationships in general were so nicely shown, and I just felt them right in my heart. So kudos for that.
And his parents.
Yes.
I thought it was so lovely to see an older boy, like the oldest boy, have such a positive, happy and healthy relationship with their mum. I thought it was so beautiful.
Absolutely.
I mean, all the kids have a fantastic relationship with their parents and with each other. I mean, they're brothers, but they all get on because there's four boys in West, Weston. There's four boys in that family. But we do get a lot more of the mum in Weston's side of the story. And I just thought that was such a positive thing. And just the same as you, massive kudos to the author for going in that direction, because it's so rare. Also, the relationship that she's built with them over comic books.
Mm-hmm.
I just thought it was really interesting. I would have, the same as you, I think I would have liked more, but that's just because I do have a bit of a soft spot for Weston. I just wish we could have a little spin-off about Weston. Not saying I really don't like Tessa to the point that I kick her out of the book, but just because Weston was such an interestingly developed character, and normally I don't have that sort of bond with male characters. I don't feel. Unless it's solely a male-male relationship. I don't think in a female-male relationship book I'm that drawn to the man all that often. Mm. So kudos to the author there for making me love a man in a book over a female. Well done, Abby.
I think there are moments where things are a bit too neat. So there's a thing where Tessa says something sort of disparaging about herself, and then there's a flashback to Weston using the exact same line in a different way, which felt a little bit too on the nose for my liking. It's not a huge deal, but it's just little things like that when I'm reading that make me, it kind of, I don't know whether it's about the suspension of disbelief that makes it feel too constructive.
You don't like cheese. That's what it is. You're not the biggest fan of cheesy cheese. You like might be a mozzarella, whereas I'm like a full cheddar cheese.
Maybe it's the cheese factor.
I loved
Oh, did you?
Yeah, but I know I'm such a cheese. Like, I know, you know, that kind of cheese that like you just can't get enough of, and it gets everywhere and your fingers are all, that's me, that's okay. What I like.
All right,
but I feel like you're just like, okay, I really like cheese, but this is too much now. And I'm just there like, yeah, give me more cheese.
Okay, so all right, note to the readers then, your liking of certain moments may depend on your tolerance for cheese. I didn't feel like I had an objection to it because it was cheesy, but maybe that is what's behind it. I'll have to think about that. I thought I liked cheese.
No, I'm not saying you don't like cheese. I just think that there are elements more in the latter half of the book where things do become quite on the nose. And I think it's because at that point, the writer or the author can flex her cheesiness because the relationship, the bond between them has grown significantly from when they first meet, because they're less annoyed by each other.
But we're going from a thing that Tessa has said in the present to a thing that Weston said before he ever knew her. So she didn't use that line knowing that he'd said it before. And he didn't use that line knowing that she was going to say it in the future. So it's nothing to do with their bond. It's just...
But that's cute. That's like that they already are one with each other before they've even met. That's like some soul cheese.
No. Okay. Agree to disagree on that particular moment, I think. Okay, listeners, if you read this and you get to the point where this happens, which is not like a major moment, so we're not spoiling anything, but you have to let us know whether you're
whether you're a soul cheese or just a normal cheese.
Whether you're a soul cheese or a cynic like me.
I do definitely never think that you're a cynic cheese. I just think you're a little bit intolerant to a soul cheese.
Okay.
But only marginally. I do think this book has...
It's fine. I'm not offended.
I do think this book has a level of cheesiness to it. I definitely feel like it is. Even if we come to... There's a scene at a point in the book where he makes her waffles.
That was cute. I like that. That was cute.
Yeah, that's very cute. I didn't object to that. That's what I mean. Like, that's borderline cheese.
There are a lot of very cute with a capital C moments. Cute beginning with C, like cheese.
Get away from my girl. That's one of them, just listeners, that what I just shouted there. Get away from my girl.
That was funny.
How did you feel about that line?
Oh, I didn't mind the line. I had mixed feelings about the scene, but I thought it was an interesting moment, and I had no issues with the line.
Okay.
I think it was funny how they both just kind of glossed over it and neither kind of...
Oh, I didn't like that. I feel like there's a lot of discussions that needed to have happened about that particular event, but
yeah.
But the line, but I like.
No issue with the line. I feel like there were other things that I want to say that I've forgotten. Oh, I would like to credit this book for making hand-holding feel as cute and romantic as it can be. It's so often overlooked in books, but, you know, and partly because, obviously, because she's blind, she's relying on other senses, and partly just because it's kind of him looking out for her. There are a lot of little moments where he sort of like takes her hand or takes her arm that I thought were really sweet. I like that a lot.
Just a little thing for the listeners, just as Laura beautifully started talking about hand holding, my dog Cheddar has just put his paw over my foot to hold me in place.
Aww.
And it's just the most darling thing that's ever happened to me, so
thank
just
you.
Wanted that literally just holding me. It's just the cutest thing. It's also warming my really cold toes up, so that's beautiful. Sorry, just to go off piece about the book again. In terms of my justice award, I want to say justice for the church, not because I'm religious, but because it seems like a point that kept getting dropped and then we don't know anything about it. And I was just a little bit confused. Is Tessa highly religious? Is it just her grandparents that are highly religious? What's her standpoint on it? And I just thought it was a really interesting development that could have happened if it was further explored. I don't know the religious beliefs of the author, so maybe that's why it wasn't further explored. But just as somebody who used to have a very solid friendship with a Christian, when something bad happened to me and I was really upset about it, the response that God is showing you a different path is not best appreciated when you're very upset. And I thought that would have been a really interesting thing to develop, especially because the beautiful thing that's been handed to this author with this plot idea is that if you're an emotive, emotional writer, living in someone's head who can't describe anything allows you to describe their innermost deepest thoughts, because often in books when the characters can see, the descriptions tend to be about the things that they see, but in part with the things that they feel. Whereas this book took that element away, and especially it's because she's very upset about it. She often forgets about her other senses. We don't really hear her saying that she smells breakfast cooking all that much. So it would have been really nice to see what her raw feelings were, other than the fact that she just hated a situation. So I'm going to give a justice for the church plot line.
Sure.
Because I just feel like it could have been a really interesting thing that maybe she could have been angry with her grandparents about. Maybe their belief that everything's going to be okay would have been better than her just being angry that, you know, they're trying to help.
Sure, yeah, that certainly could have been woven in more. And also it's interesting because one of the things about church for a lot of people is the sense of community. Now Tessa is somebody who feels very isolated. Did she previously feel involved with the church community or not? I can't remember. I have read another book since finishing this, so I don't know if I'm being unfair and I've missed something here, but I know probably typically the kind of that church goers are going to skew older than Tessa, but what, there are no people her age that she is part of a community there with? Does she, because that would be really interesting. And I'm not saying that she was supposed to, I'm not saying like, oh well, church was mentioned, so obviously she has friends at church, but just it would have been nice to have a mention of that. Does she does she feel like she's part of that faith community or not? If she's not religious, then it could be that she just likes the atmosphere once in a while, but doesn't want to get too involved because she's uncomfortable with feeling that disconnect from people there. It wouldn't have taken much to explore that, but it would have lent a really interesting layer to her relationship with her grandparents and her relationship with that potential source of comfort and community. Or, like you said, it could have been an interesting point of tension if the attitude there was kind of like, well, it's a shame, but, you know, God works in mysterious ways, which I imagine if you're pissed off about a development in your life kind of makes you want to punch someone in the face.
Definitely. I can say that from personal experience, that it definitely does make you want to, you have violent thoughts about the person that's saying it to you. That's all I'll say. I know we sort of mentioned this right at the beginning, but I do want to say a massive kudos about the cover. I just thought it's so beautiful. It has a lot of the things included, like the computer. I know I mentioned that there are little nods to things, but there's the waffles on it. The only thing that baffled me, and maybe you can help me, Laura, with it, because it's just something that threw me. I don't understand why it's sunlight.
Right, okay. I think that is because... So she's thinking of it as 100 days of darkness, right? 100 days of not being able to see, 100 days of misery. And Weston is determined to flip her perspective on this and see that actually she doesn't have to give up positive things, e.g. sunlight, for 100 days. So it's 100 days of the exact same beautiful things that were in her life before, maybe in different ways, but just because you can't see the sunlight for 100 days doesn't mean you can't experience the sunlight. That's my take.
Oh no, I love that then. Okay, no, I like that then. I didn't know if it was a slight nod to the fact that when her sight comes back, it's like bright light, and if that was meant to be the sun. And then I was like, but she didn't feel that for 100 days, and she doesn't leave the house, so like, how does she feel the warmth? But yeah,
I've got a nitpick, if you're all right for a nitpick, and you might have an answer for me on this, but does Weston just wear shorts 100% of the time? Because how come everybody, the moment they look at him, even from across the room, can immediately tell that he's not got legs? Because he's wearing prosthetics, right?
Yeah.
And I know sometimes he's got blades for running. Now, they obviously don't look like legs, and he's probably wearing running shorts anyway for that. So when he's doing that, then fair enough. But literally every single time he meets a stranger, they immediately clock that he's got no legs, even when it's just like literally the other end of an aisle in the supermarket or whatever. And I don't know about you, but when I've seen pictures of people who have prosthetics but are wearing jeans, you don't look at them and immediately zero in on the fact that they've got prosthetic legs.
No, I tended to think it was quite warm, because of no mention is the weather an effect in the story, so I just assumed it was very warm.
So he's just wearing shorts 100% of the
time. I think he's just wearing shorts. I also
does he
feel
wear
like
all right, okay, sure.
I don't know. It's definitely not mentioned that he's wearing anything else, and every single person he does meet, there is some small nod of understanding that he has had this unfortunate thing happen to him. The other thing is that I don't know if Weston as a character is somebody that, although he doesn't want to be treated very differently, will antagonize a situation by purposely shoving it down their throats. I feel like he's the kind of character who would go and wear shorts just to make the point there, and then be like, haha, you're treating me differently, even though he's like shoving it down. I don't know.
If that's the case, I would have liked to see that reference, because I don't disagree with that as an assessment of his character, but I would have liked a nod to that, him kind of saying, like having a thought of like, I could wear things that make it less obvious, but this is who I am. And I would, you know, I want the world to just acknowledge it, but not treat me differently because of it, or whatever his thought process is.
I didn't tend to notice.
But it just seemed weird to me that literally every single passing interaction with a stranger, even just like walking around in public, or just like everybody in the world seemed to immediately notice. And I guess it could be that he's projecting some of that, and maybe they aren't always noticing, but he assumes they are. But I don't know, it just, I just felt like that was odd to me.
Yeah, now you've mentioned it, now I find it odd, but I wouldn't say I noticed when I was reading it.
Okay.
But I also think...
I mean, it is nitpicky. I totally put my hands up that that's a nitpick, but it was, you know, on my mind.
Yeah, I don't feel like I noticed it, but now that you've said it, now I'm thinking about it, and I feel like that would annoy me.
Can I do another even pettier nitpick?
Okay.
I really don't like the word pansy ass.
I don't know if that's an us thing, though. It might be a very American word. Then.
Maybe it's a super American word, but...
Because I have heard it in a lot of TV shows.
Have you? I've literally never heard it before.
Yeah, I think it's definitely been used in Scrubs.
Well, there we go then. It's a Scrubs thing. I should have checked with my brother. He's a Scrubs obsessive.
I'm sure it's said a few times in various other shows. I don't even know if it's been said in Friends.
Okay.
I don't know. I've actually found it quite humorous when I read it. I also feel like maybe it was very difficult to come up with words to insult people with. Because I was going to do this in my roundup, but I'm just gonna get to it sort of now. I think my biggest issue with this book is that it's probably definitely... I think I mentioned this earlier, but it's definitely more down the young adult section.
For sure.
And I think that's why I struggled with it a lot more. It's not even because of the age of the characters, but it's the mindset and the immaturity in which the author has purposely chosen those characters to act in that I think made it difficult, because I have read 16-year-olds that I have not had this much issue with in the past. And I think it is because they just are... They're probably actually perfectly in character. And I'm so used to reading very mature 16-year-olds and young adult that I have such an issue with these characters. Either or, that's my biggest problem with the book, is that sure. I just found it very tediously immature. But maybe that's a bigger issue with young adult. Maybe that's because I am so used to hearing about characters scaling buildings at 17 when, you know, that doesn't happen. I did have some thoughts that when I was reading it, I was like, this is very different, but not comparing it to other books, but just as an example for listeners, when I was reading it, I did think to myself, this is very different from the characterization choices in Solitaire by Alice Oseman, who has also written 16-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I just kind of kept drawing those comparisons in the age of the character's mindset, not necessarily the age we're presented with. And I think that was why I struggled with the book more so than I have done previously with other books that we've discussed that may have had the same sort of overarching issues with like execution and nitpicky moments. I might have forgiven them more, I think, if I felt a lot closer to the characters.
Sure.
And I think my issue with the characters and feeling so separated from them is because they are a little bit more immature than I'm used to reading.
Yeah.
So I think, I do think that's my biggest thing with this book, and it obviously is led to the shell rating that I'm going to give when we get to that point. Because the actual plot, if you were to like plan it out, is a really nice plot. Mm. It's got a lot there that could be really explored. But I think because of the age of the characters, I don't think it was flexed enough. And I think sometimes the ribbon was held and not fully stretched out where it could have been. And then it just felt a little bit lackluster than as punchy as it could have been. Whereas I feel like if they were 2 years older, I feel like the whole dialogue would be different, the attitudes would be different, the resentment would be better understood because their thoughts would be well more developed.
Mm.
I think because they're 16, I don't know if the author's chosen purposely to not dig too deep because, you know, we're meant to be feeling that gap between them. But I just know that from some of the characters that we've read, like when we read I always forget the name, why am I so awful? Field Notes on Love. When we read Field Notes on Love,
yeah.
Those characters were just about to start university. And even still, their thought processes were a lot more mature. So I don't know if the characters were a little bit older. I think I still was meant to dislike Tessa because that's a character choice. That's an author's choice. But I definitely didn't even connect with her by the end of it.
Sure. Yeah, I think it's an interesting one. And, you know, to an extent, obviously, I know you also, we try to be mindful of the fact that we are not, strictly speaking, the target market for a YA novel. With that said, there are definitely YA novels that take a more developed approach. And I think part of it, like you said, is the characters seem to be on the immature side. And I think an interesting thing is, you know, when you get sort of kids between 14 and 18, you get a lot of variety in terms of how developed their thought processes are. Now, obviously, they're still essentially kids, no matter how mature their kind of decision making or sort of social skills or whatever seem to be. But you get a wide range, and definitely Tessa and Weston felt on the young side of 16. I don't know if that's partly just because, like you said, we're used to reading YA novels with 16-year-olds who are very different, and yeah. how realistic that is.
I will say, though, if that is the intention, is that they are meant to be slightly immature, the author's done a phenomenal job.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the thing, is it's hard to tell with books because art, we say this all the time, but art is very subjective. what one person doesn't understand or doesn't like so much, another will absolutely love. And for me, I think I'm just a little bit too old for this book. I think that's the issue. I think there's nothing other than our nitpicks, really, and us, even the execution. The execution might be off for us because of our age. It is hard to tell. I mean, there's still some work that I think could have been done. And I think, you know, it's not so much editing grammar-wise, but it's more just seamlessness of the plot being presented to the reader. But I think my biggest thing is the fact that maybe I'm just a little bit too old, which I hate saying because I'm like so young. I'm such a young person. But yeah, I am glad that I've read it. Because it's definitely broadened my horizons to the fact that there are YA books that aren't for me, which I know is a weird thing to realise, but I actually kind of like that, because you can read whatever books you want. You can read middle grade, you can read like toddler books if that's what you want to read and you love that. There is no shame on that. But the nice thing for me to realise is that yes, I have those choices, but sometimes I have to be mindful that they're not written for me.
Sure.
And this book presented that to me, and it was a nice realisation to have. Not all books are written for you, you dude. You pansy ass.
Oh, don't. That, I don't know why it annoyed me so much. It just felt like such. It feels like such a stupid word. But hey, if that's what Americans like to use, then more power to them. Yeah. In terms, I don't know what I can really add to that. To me, it felt like a lot of the. Okay, so other than what you said, I agree that I think it fundamentally is too young for me. This issue, though, I don't think I'm being unfair in saying that it felt like quite a lot rested on the characters just not acknowledging stuff that would have been helpful and relevant, like Tessa just not acknowledging that she could use dictation software and screen readers and call her friends, and also the sort of strange way that she was acting as if she thought it was forever that she was blind, and then she'd say something that clearly meant that she did in fact believe that there was an end in the not terribly distant future, but that didn't seem to, there was no sense of, well, at least after 80 days, after 70 more days, even though she was counting down to it, there was no sense of hope. And that was really weird. That was a disconnect that I found very difficult, and that seemed to be very central to the plot in a way that I think that I struggled with. And I don't think that's an age thing. That just bothered me, I think, and continued to feel like an issue. I like the way it was constructed. I like the setup of kind of Weston taking her through the different senses. There was a repeated issue with Weston and boundaries. And there were some moments towards the end where I was like, this is actually quite irresponsible. Yeah. Like, someone needs to teach this kid that no matter what he personally thinks of somebody's boundaries, even if he thinks they're coming from a place of fear and they should just smash through them, that you kind of just need to respect what people are and are not ready for in their lives. And the fact that Tessa was like, oh, I'm vastly uncomfortable with this, but hey, I guess I'm fine now, was not great from my point of view. So there were some kind of fundamental things like that that really bothered me. But on the other hand, I think it was a well put together book. I think the writing was largely really good, other than a few things that, like I said, didn't love in the moment, but they were like individual lines rather than like structurally. I think the book was written really well. And, you know, I think it was well put together. It's just, it was resting on some foundational things that I took issue with.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. What's your, out of interest, I think, to drive us home?
Sure.
What's your seashell rating?
What is my seashell rating? 2.5.
That's fair.
It was okay. At moments I liked it, but I am reverting on the whole to somewhere between it was okay and I liked it.
I gave it a 3. I think I probably gave it a little bit more leeway, but that's just, I think, because for me, I probably glossed over a lot more of the nitty-picky stuff, but obviously I'm acknowledging that there are still a lot of things that really needed to be looked at and worked on. But yeah, I just felt really comfortable with a 3.
Hmm.
So yeah. Would you take this book to your island library?
No, I would. Would you?
No. Which, you know, is just a little bit sad, but yeah, I'm happy with that decision. And that's 100 Days of Sunlight by Abby Emmons. I will say, I did enjoy reading the book. I just want to end on that note. I just want people to know, I just don't think it was for me.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, different. It was nice to read an indie book.
Yes, it was nice to read an indie book.
And actually gave me a lot more positive thoughts about indie books.
Yes, absolutely.
Than I previously had, so that was really nice. But obviously, you know, we've got to go to the other part of the podcast now, which is Jo's random question of the week.
I feel like you're getting pretty consistent with that. That I think that is our theme tune now.
Yeah, I think I've been practicing. I didn't say. So this one isn't a would you rather.
Oh.
Yeah, I mixed it up. So if you could instantly learn any skill, what would it be? Listeners, her face has dropped.
Hi.
Curveball.
That's
you
so hard.
Ass.
Oh, if you make this a thing, I swear to God, I will stop recording with you. That's how strongly I feel about this.
Oh no. Okay, I'm really, really sorry. Really sorry. Please do be my friend.
I didn't say I'd stop being your friend.
I know, but I feel like we communicate a lot more because of the
That's true. This is where we probably spend the most time together. Do you have an answer to this?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
You go first.
But I am at an advantage because
exactly. That's why I'm asking you to go first. Well, I think
so. I've been obviously trying to do this self-taught anyway, but I would instantly love to be able to speak Spanish, to learn Spanish, basically, because it is, over the better part of a year, I've been self-teaching, and I have vastly improved, and, you know, some things now on shows, I have the subtitles on, like, I practice with Jane the Virgin, for example, and I have that in Spanish dialogue with English subtitles, and there are things that when I hear them, I don't need to read the subtitles to understand now, which is really nice. I wouldn't say that's that collectively over that, it just might be a sentence or a phrase, and I'm like, oh, I already knew what that meant, which is kind of nice, but it would be really nice to just know a language, to just be able to just speak fluently another language. So that's the skill I picked, only because I'm not musical and I'm physically unfit, so there's no point in me learning anything to do with building, you know. None of those skills are of any benefit to me because I'm just useless, so at least speaking, aww, I can do that. No, if like to the listeners, this weekend has been the most stressful weekend because I've been moving furniture up and down around my house to get my office downstairs, and never before in my life has it been highlighted to me how bloody useless I am when lifting furniture or doing anything physical, because if I even build anything it breaks, so I'm just not very good at it. And as much as it'll be like, oh well, Joe, why didn't you learn that skill, fun fact, I just don't have the mental capacity to do it. I have short span, and my husband just has to do it because even he can just see how I'm struggling with it. But yeah, so I would instantly learn Spanish.
Okay, so I haven't quite pinned down exactly, but for me it would be something around coding, specifically for web development.
Ooh, that's a cool one.
Yeah, because I recently updated my website and sort of changed the theme and stuff, and I like how pretty it looks now, but there are just so many things that I don't know how to do. And my husband has just started a website and he keeps saying, oh, do you know how to do this? And I'm like, no. He's like, oh, you've got a website, do you know how to do this? No.
It'd be really nice to just be able to go, yeah, I do actually.
It would be great to be able to say, oh yeah, you just go into this file, edit the PHP to blah blah blah, and then you just take everything out between config and blah blah blah, and to actually know what I was talking about, but I know nothing. Jon Snow. So yeah, I would go for coding for web development, I guess.
Wicked. No, I love that. I love that we've picked two very different things. That's really cool. We'll get back to you, lovely listeners, if any of those things are learnt.
Oh, if only.
I know. But that is... That's the end of this episode. I'm unsure what I'm going to read next week, only because some exciting news is coming from the Island Library.
Ooh.
If you're somebody who checks out our website, you might have seen that it has gone live. But I can officially say it now, the Island Library is having a book club. So every month, myself and Laura will both choose a book we have not read. Something of sort of our tastes that you might have been able to pick up on the last couple of weeks that you've been listening to us, and you can read along with us. So if you join our Patreon, there's a new point that you can add in, which is a cheaper option to be able to interact with us. If you go for one of the higher bands on Patreon, you'll be able to offer questions and even have a Q&A with me and Laura before the podcast is even filmed. And Yeah, there's lots of cool benefits to the book club, but also just for the sense of community of belonging to something. And you get the option of discussing either one of the books. So you can be in the part of pitching to me or Laura. So it's a really exciting time coming for the Island Library podcast and soon to be book club.
It'll be great. I'm looking forward to shamelessly stealing ideas from listeners who have better observations about the books than me and then bringing to the podcast. Well, I promise I will give you credit though. If you give me an idea, which you probably will, I will credit you when we're recording.
Yeah. The important thing is to mention here is that you can be as involved in this book club or not. Like, you can literally see what book we're reading that month, and if you don't want to interact with us and just read it, you can do. Like, it's completely fine. It's all up to you how much you want to be involved. But myself and Laura, because we both don't live close to one another, we know how important the sense of community is and how important it has been to lockdown for us having these weekly sessions together. So we wanted to try and bring that out to the wider world. But yeah, thank you so much from me for joining us once again, and let us know your thoughts on 100 Days of Sunlight if you do read it.
Yeah, thanks for listening, and we will see you next week.
See ya, bye.
Bye.